Devaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 14, text 36. And it's prose, so I'll just read the translation and the Srila Prabhupada's purport. So sometimes, having no money, the conditioned soul does not get sufficient accommodations. Sometimes he doesn't even have a place to sit, nor does he have the other necessities. In other words, he falls into scarcity. And at that time, when he is unable to secure the necessities by fair means, he decides to seize the property of others unfairly. When he cannot get the things he wants, he simply receives insults from others and thus becomes very morose. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It is said that necessity knows no law. When the conditioned soul needs money to acquire life's bare necessities, he adopts any means. He begs, borrows, or steals. Instead of receiving these things, he is insulted and chastised. Unless one is very well organized, one cannot accumulate riches by unfair means. Even if one acquires riches by unfair means, he cannot avoid punishment and insult from the government or the general populace. There are many instances of important people's embezzling money, getting caught, and being put in prison. One may be able to avoid the punishment of prison, but one cannot avoid the punishment of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who works through the agency of material nature. This is described in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 14. Daivhiye shugunamai mama maya durachaya. Nature is very cruel. She does not excuse anyone. When people do not care for nature, they commit all kinds of sinful activities, and consequently, they have to suffer. Om aginata manandasha jananjana shalakaya chakshura militam yena tasma shri gurave namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So in recent classes we've been hearing a lot about how undesirable material life is, quite rightly so. And we've also been hearing from various speakers how fortunate we are to have come in contact with Krishna consciousness, this philosophy, and how much we should be grateful, you know, that Srila Prabhupada has brought this philosophy to us here in, from India to the Western world and all over the world. And we should be also desiring to repay him. And Ramaswaram Prabhu, he referred to an exchange of letters that happened here in between Srila, the devotees here of New Dwarka, and Prabhupada in 1974, but he didn't actually quote it. The devotees here wrote a Vyas Puja homage, he told me in another conversation I had with him, here in 1974, where they were, you know, glorifying Prabhupada. And at the end, they said something to the effect, and we don't know how to repay you. We'd like to repay you. Actually, we don't know how to repay you. And Prabhupada wrote a letter responding to that Vyasa Puja homage, which, you know, ordinarily he didn't do. But in this particular occasion, he did. And he said, thank you for your Vyasa Puja homage. He said, actually, you're correct. That's a correct sentiment. We should always be, you know, wanting to repay the spiritual master. And he said, and you're right. There is no way that you can repay the spiritual master for the debt that we, you know, that you owe to him of receiving this transcendental knowledge. But he went on to say, but if you'd all want to repay me, then please preach very vigorously as I am preaching. So that was Prabhupada's reply or response to that Vyasa Puja homage of 1974 from the devotees here of New Dwarka. And it's also been mentioned, Ramaswar Prabhu mentioned that, and even the Runtra mentioned it yesterday in his class, that there's different ways to preach, of course. There's prasadam distribution, there's harinam, on different occasions, Prabhupada said they're equally important. Actually, on two different occasions, Shivaram Maharaj asked him, Prabhupada, of book distribution, of Harinam, Prashadam distribution, and book distribution, which is the most important? And Prabhupada said, they're all equally important. And then a few years later, he had the opportunity to ask him the same question again, and on that occasion, Prabhupada gave him the same answer. So that's there. But it's also there that, you know, Prabhupada did emphasize on other occasions the importance of book distribution and how an important aspect of preaching that was. And Ramaswar gave us a very nice breakdown of the history of how the BBT, by giving out loans to different devotees who were heading up different projects, was able to help the movement spread, not just here in the United States, but worldwide. I think everybody found that very, very interesting, that, part of his presentation the other morning. And Narantara actually also gave an interesting example from his own life. Yesterday he mentioned how, before he became a devotee, he was interested in spiritual things. The trend, it was fashionable to be interested in spiritual things back in those days. And he had received literature from different organizations. He wasn't at all impressed. He made the statement, "What is this? Gobbledygook. Yeah, what is this gobbledygook?" That was his feeling about the other things he was receiving. But he said one day he received a teachings of Prahlad Maharaj from Mother Divashakti. I don't think he mentioned where. And he started reading it, and immediately he felt, this is it. This is what I've been looking for my whole life. It just really spoke to him. It resonated with the core of his being, so to speak. And he became very inspired by that. And that's the effect that Srila Prabhupada's books have on a lot of people's lives. Actually, the same thing happened to me. I got books. It took a little bit more than one occasion with me. I guess the more covered somebody is, the more punches they have, more impacts they require. But I got books from devotees on three different occasions, and the third one floored me, and I became a devotee like two or three days after that. First, I got a couple little books. I was going on a camping trip with a friend of mine to Bear Mountain State Park, and I was going through the Port Authority bus station in New York, and I think it was Mother Sunita and Mother Shikundi and Mother Alarka and maybe, I can't remember who else was there at the time, but they gave me a On the Way to Krishna and a Beyond Birth and Death, Easy Journey to Other Planets. That was combined into one book at that point. And I remember I was reading it on the bus on the way up to the, to the park. And I was thinking, wow, this is far out stuff. I was so impressed. And I was trying to get my friend to read it. He was an engineering student at MIT, and he wasn't interested. He wasn't, Anyway, finally, because I pestered him enough, he had a look at it, and he said, "Well, yeah, but so you can't prove any of this." Anything. He wasn't, for some reason, it wasn't his time. He was not a ripe fruit at that point. I don't know. I've lost touch with him. I don't know what's happened. Maybe he's since, but anyway, it really impressed me. And then on the way back down, the camping trip got rained out, so we turned to. After a few hours, we just kind of turned around, came back down. They got me again in Port Authority bus station, and they gave me a BTG and something else. And I remember at BTG, there was one conversation where devotees asked Prabhupada, "When can we become initiated?" It was the first BTG I saw, and Prabhupada said, "You're already initiated. As soon as you're serious to follow my instructions, that is initiation." I'm not trying to advocate for rifics here, by the way, but that just stuck out in my mind. That was the first BTG I read, and that was just something that really impressed me even at that time. That made, being very sensible. And then I used to work as for Amala Bhakta at a Hatha Yoga studio he managed in down Midtown Manhattan called the Yogi Gupta Center. It was like, the classical bogey yoga center, and I was just doing like service there and everything. So one day I was going home, back getting ready to go back to the Bronx to catch the 6 train on Lexington and 5th Avenue. Lexington and 59th Street. And just as I was going into the subway, a devotee stopped me and handed me a teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So I looked at it, I said, "What's this?" He said, "Oh, it's a book about yoga." I said, "Oh, really? Well, I'm into that." And then, he said, "This is the highest yoga." And, he gave his pitch there, and I gave him a donation. Anyway, I took the book, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. After giving, like, 3 donations and having the book changed on me, he gave me a used book for the new book that he handed me originally. But I said, "Okay, I don't care." I said, "It's okay, as long as it's the same book." He got me interested. So I started reading it, and I found, wow, this is really interesting. I mean, this book is good. And I was reading it. I went down into the subway, and this was Friday evening, you know, about 5 o'clock. It was peak rush hour crowd. So, you know, it was like this, you know, just like a sardine with all the people there. But I kept reading that book. I read it as I was standing there waiting for the train, on the train, and even as I was walking from the train station back to where I live, I was reading it as I was walking. And when I got home, I kept reading it. I had to keep reading it. And I remember thinking to myself at one point, you know what? I don't even know if I understand what I'm reading. But, man, this stuff is far out. This is great. I'm really, you know, I just felt really enlivened reading it. And I read it all the way till I finished it, which was about like 3-4 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And then I realized, well, you know, I got to get the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, because it kept talking in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya about the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I got to get one of these Srimad Bhagavatams, but I couldn't find any contact information in the book. They might have said the address of the press might have been in there someplace, but back in those days you didn't have Google. You know, you couldn't just go on your computer and type in the address and get a map to where it was. I didn't know where, if I can't even remember, I don't think it was in there, but even saying it was in the Tiffany place, how do you find out where Tiffany place is in Brooklyn? I might have rang the operator or something like that. So I just figured I'll just go back to the same place and hopefully I'll meet a devotee there. If, you know, that same fellow, maybe that's his spot. So anyway, I did that, and I as I was coming out of the subway, there was another devotee going into the subway, and he saw me and he handed me a long stem rose. And he asked me for a donation. I said, yeah, sure, I'll give you a donation. I could see he was the same group because he was dressed the same way as the other guy. So I gave him a couple dollars. And he said, oh, thank you very much. And I said, you know, by the way, do you have any of those Srimad Bhagavatams? And he just about fell over backwards, you know. What? Because, you know, who asks you for a Srimad Bhagavatam? I've been distributing books for 36 years now almost, and or more, actually. And nobody's ever come up to me and asked me for a Srimad Bhagavatam. So he, you know, he immediately picked up, wait a second, we got one here, you know. So he said, well, yeah, I do, actually, as a matter of fact. I said, well, how many can you give me for $30? That was all the money I had at that point. I, you know, got my life savings together, what I had left of it. And I figured I'll just buy as many Srimad Bhagavatams as I can for that amount of money. So he said, well, I got First Canto Part 1, 2, and 3 here. I can give you that. So he gave me all three of them. And then he thought, but wait a second, you know, I got to get this guy to come to the temple. So he asked me, look, those are the only three I have. And it's the beginning of the day. It's about, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning. So he said, can I ask you a favor? I said, well, what's that? I thought to myself, here we go again, you know, because the other fellow gave me the new book, and then he got more two additional donations, and then he took back the new one and gave me the old one. So I thought, okay, what's coming now, you know? So he said, well, you know, those are the only three Bhagavatams I have, and beginning of the day, you think, could I just give you the one of them, and I'll give you the other two tomorrow at the Sunday feast? I said, Sunday feast, what's that? He said, oh, you know, we have a temple, and he told me about the temple and the Sunday feast program and everything. So he said, when you come tomorrow for the Sunday feast, I'll give you the other two volumes. I said, well, all right, okay. I figured to myself, because by that point I was already so impressed by what I was reading, and I figured that, you know, there's a possibility I might become one of these people, so I should at least make the test, see if they're at least honest, you know. Certainly they have a nice philosophy. So I figured, okay, he gave me the First Canto Part 1, and I just turned right around, got back in the subway, and went back to the Bronx and started reading it. And then I thought to myself, well, yep, sure enough, this is the same thing, same as this other one I was reading, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, really, you know, enlivening and ecstatic. Anyway, so the next day I went to the temple, and which was the Sunday feast, and I'll cut a long story short. Basically, I became a devotee the next day after that, on the Monday. But so the point being that these books are potent. These books are potent. And even in the Bible it says, know the truth and it will set you free. You see? So a lot of people, you know, when they come in contact with this philosophy, they become inspired. You know, Vaisheshika gave us really incredible, wonderful example. I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago when he was here on the Prabhupada Festival for giving the Sankirtan inspirational talk here in the temple room. He gave the example of how people are like fruit. And so when you go to pick fruit, you want to try to pick the ripe fruit, you know. So when if you try to pick the unripe fruit, it's a big struggle. You know, you got to try to, you're pulling it off the tree. And if you find, even when you finally do get it off, you have to, you know, really yank it off because it's not ripe. It's green. It's not ready to come off here. And you can't eat it really. Or even if you do eat it, it's not going to be sweet at that time because it's not ripe fruit. You see? And if the fruit is rotten, you know, if it's already fallen off the tree, then it's going rotten on the ground, and that's not ideal. Ideal is when it's ripe, because when the fruit's ripe, you just put your hand up there and just go boop, and it comes right off, you know, and it smells good, and it's nice and juicy, and it tastes good. So you want the ripe fruit. See, so in the same way, people are in that, like that too, and this is an analogy that there's people who are just ripe for Krishna consciousness. And as when we're out on Sankirtan, when we're preaching, those are the people ideally who we want to. We want to try to help everybody we come in contact with, but we're particularly interested in those ripe fruit, because those people, you just hold out the book, you know, and it's almost like for the ripe ones, you know, you just hold out the book and they go, it's like a magnet, you know. They're immediately attracted. You don't even have to say anything, you know, if they're ripe enough. I've had that experience. And as soon as you put it in their hands and you just show them anything about it, they're interested, you see? So we give everybody a chance. You know, everybody has to get their chance, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. But we're particularly interested in the ripe fruit. So when you meet these people who are ripe and they come in contact with Prabhupada's book, they become enlivened. You know, it has an effect. It has an impact. They become inspired, and they want to engage. They want the book. They want to take it. They're happy to give a donation. And I'll give some examples. For the rest of this class, I'll talk about book distribution and how to distribute books, but in a way that's as Krishna conscious as I could possibly make it. I don't want it to degenerate to the level of shop talk. I'll try to prop up. There's many different aspects of, you know, distributing books, but one important aspect is Prabhupada did give the instruction to try to distribute the book on the merit of the book. So I want to try to say something about that, because that's really nice and Krishna conscious. Now, what is the merit of these books? By the way, one reason why I'm taking the liberty to talk about this, it's not exactly on the purport today, is because, as I mentioned right in the beginning of the class, we've heard a lot of classes talking about the different negative aspects of material life, and, you know, so I think everybody's, we maybe hope, you can never sufficiently hear about that, because, you know, you have to have a pessimistic outlook to be, have an impetus to make advancement in spiritual life, but hopefully it's been covered, I think it's been covered very nicely by previous speakers. And also, in the room today, there are a lot of devotees who are just on the verge of getting into book distribution. Our three bhaktas in the bhakta program starting this coming Monday are going to be starting book distribution. Surya went out yesterday for his first time, correct? Okay, I don't know. I didn't get a chance to talk to him yet, so I don't know what kind of experience he had. Bhakta Bobby, previous book distributor, went out a couple last week, one day, and did about 15 hardback books in like about an hour at Cal State, U.S., you know, Cal State, L.A. And Banabhata's been talking to me about book distribution. I know Jaigaranga's thinking about getting into a bit more. And there's all sorts of different devotees. You know who you are. I'm not going to embarrass everybody by mentioning their names, who have actually talked to me within the last 2 weeks about book distribution. So I thought I'd kind of try to get into it a little bit. So distributing the books on the merit of the books, okay? Now, what is the merit of these books? Well, the philosophy. It just happens that, you know, it's the absolute truth. So the merit of these books is the philosophy within them, right? And in a very simple way, you know, distributing the books on the merit of the book is just when people try to interest the people in the book by what's in the book. I'll give you an example of what I mean. A lady came up to me yesterday and said, I did my initial pitch, which is I usually give people a little bit of a compliment, and I introduce myself, you know, where I'm from and like that, you know. And then I show them the book. And I usually show them the pictures because it's easy to, you know, I show them the picture of the man with the bull head and the bull with the man's head showing, you know, that's karma, what goes around comes around, then changing bodies. And I show him, I said, this, you know, shows how consciousness continues even after the body's finished. And then I point to the picture of the yogi meditating on the Vishnumurti, and I ask him, hey, by the way, can you sit like that? And they usually, you know, it's just for a joke. And they, whatever they say, I say, yeah, it takes a little practice, you know. And then she asked me, she said, well, actually, this is a coincidence, because I'm going to a yoga retreat to do, like, I think she said Kundalini yoga. She asked me, she said, will this book help me open my chakras. You know, she specifically asked me that. And I said, well, I said, it's funny you should ask that. And so I just opened up to chapter 8 of the Bhagavad Gita, text 10. And I read her. I read her this. I said, I just found, you know, I knew just where this was. So I went right to the purport and I read her. I said, for those practicing yoga, it is recommended that they raise the life force between the eyebrows to the Agya chakra. The practice of Sat Chakra Yoga involving meditation on the six chakras is suggested here. That's all I had to read her, you know. And then I said to her, I said, by the way, that phrase, raise the life force, that's opening the chakras. When you raise the life force to the higher chakra, that's opening that chakra. That's the same thing. So that's what you're, you know, referring to here. She just read that and she went, okay. You know, she said, where do I get this book? Because a lot of times when I approach people, they don't actually, they haven't worked out what's going on. You know, they don't know that I'm actually trying to distribute the books, and they just think I'm some guy coming up to them and, you know, starting a friendly conversation, showing them a book. So she said, well, where can I get this book? I said, well, you could have this one. She said, oh, no, that's your book. I can't take your book like that. I said, no, I'm out here distributing them. And I pointed to my bag and I said, look, these are all the same books, you know. I said, I'm not traveling with 20 copies of the same book. So she said, oh, okay. So I said, you know, then I take out my ID card and I said, you know, we're a nonprofit. We do free food and education and people just give a donation. Could you throw in a donation to help out? And then she said, well, what's an appropriate donation? I said, oh, a lot of people give. I'm allowed to say a number. A lot of people give. And she said, okay, great. And she gave a donation like that. So, you know, like that. So I just gave it to her. She asked specifically, and then I just was able to show her right from the book something. So my point is that the first thing to distribute books is read them, particularly the Bhagavad Gita. If we just read the Bhagavad Gita and you know, read it really carefully and well, you're going to find so many things. I'm going to give more examples just on this same point. You're going to find so many things right in the book that's going to enable you to distribute the book. Okay, so there's one example. And also, you know, I showed her that, and then I handed her the book and let her read a little bit more. It's in the 8th chapter. It's talking about, you know, how you, if you remember Krishna at the time of death, you go. So, you know, just she could, the whole thing was just became attractive to her because I gave her the link. You know, it's kind of like, she was interested in that, and I showed her how, yeah, this book is relevant to what you're interested in. It's what you're looking for. You know, she got that feeling, and she immediately took it. Another example of that is, and this was practically, I think it was the next guy I approached. He was a big guy, you know, looked like he could have been a professional athlete, but wasn't quite, you know, have what it took, and was probably a construction guy. That's what sure enough he was, you know. Anyway, so I approached him. Worked out he was an ex-Marine. And so I just started talking to him. I showed him, you know, did the standard thing, showing him the pictures and like that. And I said, so what, you know, then I asked him, well, I said, what do you do? He says, well, I'm a construction contractor. I said, and he mentioned to me that at some point he was a former Marine. And, you know, I might have said something to him about, I said, oh, yeah, it's probably pretty heavy over there. Were you over there? And he said, yeah, he was in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know. But he made the point, but that's a necessary, you know, he says, that's a necessary, I can't remember what I said that triggered his comment, but he said, that's a necessary war. You know, he says, you know, we need to be over there because, you know, if we weren't over there, those guys would drop a, you know, nuclear bomb on us and kill a million people. So I could see, you know, where he was coming from, what his mood was. So I said, yeah, sir, you're right. I said, yeah, and actually, I said, read this. I said, you know, and then I opened up, I think I read it to him. I opened up the chapter 1, text 36, purport, and I just read him this. I said, according to Vedic injunctions, there are 6 kinds of aggressors. 1, a poison giver. 2, one who sets fire to the house. 3, one who attacks with deadly weapons. 4, one who plunders riches. 5, one who occupies another's land. And 6, one who kidnaps a wife. Such aggressors are at once to be killed, and no sin is incurred by killing such aggressors. So, and I also mentioned to him that, you know, it says elsewhere in this book that violence is required where good arguments fail. So I said, no, you know, we're not pacifists. There's time and place where violence is required. And, you know, this is possibly, you know, obviously from your perspective, this is one, you know, one such case, one situation. So he could, you know, he could relate to that. He took the book. You know, so as another example, then I met a lady who was, this was another day, I met a lady who was a nutritionist. And this one I have to give thanks to Sukadev Prabhu because he, in the morning after we do Mangalarti, You know, he always asks me a bunch of questions from the Bhagavad Gita, well thought out questions. Is he awake there? Yeah. Eyeballs are good. Giving you a pitch, giving you a little bit of. And they are well thought out questions. He always does a really good job. And one morning it was about, it was 17th chapter, and it was something about food. So anyway, so this lady said she was a nutritionist, so I immediately took the book, I opened to the 17th chapter, and I read it, the first couple sentences of the purport. It says, "The purpose of food is to increase the duration of life, purify the mind, and aid bodily strength. This is its only purpose." And then it goes on, of course, and I just handed her back the book and had her read the next, you know, paragraph or so like that. And she said, "Oh, yeah, good, I'll take this book. This looks interesting." You know, so boom, nutritionist. So she took it. This, you know, something for everybody. Another example. This is lots, and this is happens a lot. I do. This is an example I use a lot. These are new ones, by the way. I've mentioned a couple in different classes, but I'm trying to give come up with some new ones here. Sometimes people say, "I've got the Bhagavad Gita." Then I immediately say, "Well, do you have Bhagavad Gita as it is?" And they say, no, I've got some little Bhagavad Gita. You know, they tell you, they describe the one they have itself. Obviously some, like, you know, Penguin Edition or Juan Mascaro's Christopher Isherwood, you know, Bantam Books type of Bhagavad Gita. So I say, well, there's a difference. You say, see, this Bhagavad Gita, it's called Bhagavad Gita as it is. And that's the reason is because the author of this edition, and I show him Prabhupada's picture, is like the equivalent of the Dalai Lama in this tradition. You know, you try to give him something they can relate to. I say, and then I turn to that thing about the Pacific succession, the chart there. I say, because he's in an unbroken chain of teachers that goes back 5,000 years to the original author of this book, you know, Krishna. And I say, the significance of that is this, and I read him this, right? And right opposite that page where the disciplic succession is listed, the first purport of the first verse of the first chapter, Prabhupada says, and I read him this, it says, "One should read Bhagavad Gita very scrutinizingly with the help of a person who is a devotee of Sri Krishna and try to understand it without personally motivated interpretations." So then I make the point. So when you read this, you're not getting a personally motivated interpretation. In other words, and I just, you know, I have to explain to myself, you're not reading what's somebody who is trying to cash in on the fame and the popularity of this book. This author is actually a practicing, you know, member of this tradition. And not just any old practicing member, he was the topmost. And that's why he's in this unbroken chain of teachers. You know, he's the topmost practitioner and he's a great author as well. So when you read this Bhagavad Gita, you're going to be getting exactly the same, like, message as you would have got if you were there personally 5,000 years ago when the original author was communicating it to his audience. You see, so like that, it's about as direct philosophy as you can get. So it's right out of the book. You're showing him the disciplic succession, and you're just reading to him something right from the purport. I'm warming up for this one. I haven't started to use this sentence yet, but I'd like to in the future. It's just further on in the same purport. It says, "It is the perfect theistic science because it is directly spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna." When I can use that to distribute books, I'll consider that the perfection of my book distribution. When I can put that one in there. But let's see, I'll skip. How are we doing for time? About 8:05, is it? 5 minutes left? Okay. Well, all right, so I'll skip ahead. I'll skip the example about Christians and Buddhists because I've mentioned that in the previous class, but if anybody's interested, they can get that from me afterwards because there's two good ones in the Bhagavad Gita, one for Christians, one for Buddhists. They're absolutely fabulous, and they work, and people take books on the strength of that. And I'll mention this, the most recent one here. This movie, Avatar. Probably everybody's heard about it. I hope everybody hasn't seen it because we shouldn't be going to see it. But we've all heard about it, I'm sure. So anyway, so it's supposedly very popular and everything. And last week I started using that. I said, "Hey, by the way, you know, did you see that film Avatar?" And a lot of them say yes, and some say no. But I said, "But you heard about it, right?" And they say, "Yeah." I said, "Actually, the idea came from here, you know." And they say, "You know, they don't." And I open to the glossary, and there's the word, Avatar, you know. And I just read it to him. I said, "The Avatar, one who descends," you know. And then it describes a specifically empowered personality, blah, blah, blah. And it gives a little further, elaborates upon that. But I just show him, see, one who descends. And then I show him the picture. So here, these are the avatars, Das Avatars. There's 10 principal avatars. And I explain to him, this guy, Cameron, what he did was he took the idea from here, from this tradition, not necessarily specifically from this book, but from this tradition, and he just fictionalized it. You know, he just kind of spun a story out that worked for him. that he thought would work to, you know, make a movie popular, but he got the idea from this. There's no other tradition where this word is there, avatar. And they're impressed by that, you know, and I've had people take the book on the strength of that, avatar. So those are examples of how you can actually distribute the book just by what's in the book. Okay, so I'll stop there. I had a lot more stuff to say, but I'll stop there, and because possibly there's, you know, people have some questions or something like that, and I don't want to run out of time and leave no time for. Does anybody have any? Otherwise, I'll keep talking. But if somebody has a question, they can ask now, so we could do it within the allowed time. Yeah.
When we're out distributing books, obviously we should wear our T-lock, but also should we wear our dress, you know, our full dhoti and everything that we wear in here?
Yeah, you can. There's no harm. Actually, it's if you feel confident that you can distribute wearing, you know, dhoti, kurta, and T-lock, and shaved head, and sika, then do it. You know, and in certain situations, it's really... It's not an impediment. I mean, obviously, if you're going to some place where you have to be undercover, then, you know, there's a chance that, you know, you're not really fully legal to be distributing them, and you want to kind of adopt some disguise, you know.
But, depending on the environment where you're distributing.
Yeah, but if that's not the case, you can do like that. Actually, there's a very, very successful distributor. He visited here recently, Rupa Raghunath, the devotee from Australia. And every possible opportunity he gets, he goes out on book distribution and dhoti, kurta, tilak, shaved head, like that. And he does great. He's very, very successful. He's a very good book distributor. So, yeah, go for it. I mean, I don't do that myself all the time because for just so many years of the habit of dressing in, you know, Western clothes, I just, you know. But I don't think it's good. If you want to do that, that's good. I think you should first try to distribute like that, and if you're finding it, you know, becomes a problem, then you can. It is also acceptable to wear Western clothes, but that's ideal, you know, because then people are getting the full, you know, the full thing. They're seeing you as a Hare Krishna. They're hearing you as a Hare Krishna. They're everything, you know. So they're getting, you know, a lot right there in one go. So that's good if you can do that. Anybody else have anything? Okay, so do I still have a couple minutes here? All right, so I'll just go on and make another point here. So so I said that distributing the book begins with reading the books, and aside from ideas how to distribute the books, you'll get inspiration from the books. I mean, the whole book is inspiration, but there'll be certain things that actually kind of stick in your mind and that you can actually meditate on throughout the day. I'll give you just a few examples of that for myself. Like in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's one. This is just a sentence. Prabhupada says, "One who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord has nothing to fear, even in the midst of the greatest calamity." I just, you know, sometimes I just turn to that and I just try to remember it, and I go, "Well, yeah, what's what I have to be in anxiety about? Just, you know, taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. I've, you know, everything's nothing to fear." And then there's actually here's something interesting. Prabhupada once quoted. He made this statement. It was on the. During that period when they were trying to have the marathon to get out all the Chaitanya Charitamritas, and they were saying, you know, Prabhupada, we can't possibly get that many books out in that short a time. It's impossible. And Prabhupada's response was, "Impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary." Actually, that quote originally comes from Napoleon, Napoleon Bonaparte, actually. I looked it up on the internet. He said, "Impossible is a word in the dictionary of a fool." Basically the same thing. It's okay. Prabhupada quotes Chanakapanda saying that you can take gold from a filthy place, a wife from a otherwise unqualified family, and a lesson from somebody who might not be a pundit, you know, if it's... So anyway, that's you know, he quoted that at that time. And I was, you know, so I meditated in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm thinking, well, what is that, you know, why? Why is that? Why is impossible a word in a fool's dictionary? And it always makes me remember this one part in the ninth chapter, text 5 in the purport, where Prabhupada says, "We may think of doing something, but sometimes it is there may be impediments, and sometimes it is not possible to do as we like." But he says, "But when Krishna wants to do something, simply by his willing, everything happens so wonderfully that it is not possible. We cannot even imagine how it is being done. You see, so nothing's impossible for Krishna. That's why impossible is a word in the Fool's Dictionary. You see, so you know, we're surrendering to Krishna. When we're engaging in devotional service, we're connected to Krishna. So you're connected to the Supreme. Nothing's impossible. So also for us, to the degree we're connected to that, and to that degree that Krishna is using us as his instrument, to that degree also nothing is impossible. And you experience. So it's good to remember that when you're on Sankirtan, you know, or any service. You know, your mind might be saying that, oh, I can't do this, or this can't possibly be successful, but it's just illusion. Why not? Nothing's impossible for Krishna. Just, you know. And actually, I'll, this is the last point I'll make, and I'll end here, even though I got, as I said, a bunch of, not a lot more things to say, but I don't want to go over time. Is that, and you really do experience that when you, at least, you know, I mean, I guess in every service, but on Sankirtan, that nothing is impossible. You just, it's the mind so often is just cheating us like anything. You know, but when you just actually make that determination that, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to start now, and I'm going to work straight through and stop at this time. And then just whatever happens, happens. And then Krishna just takes over, you know, and he just, he sends the people. He makes it happen. Krishna makes it happen. In other words, you know, we hear a lot about in classes, and rightly so, that how if you have good sadhana, Krishna reciprocates with your good sadhana. And that's true. And Prabhupada emphasized that himself. Prabhupada emphasized in 1975 in Atlanta, Prabhupada met with the book distributors, and he said, the leader of the book distributors said, Prabhupada, when we go to the temples, they ask us to give class on book distribution technique. And Prabhupada interrupted him and said, so what do you tell them? And he said, well, we tell them actually first they have to read the books and follow the regulative principles. And Prabhupada interrupted, yes, that is our only technique, to become very devout followers of the rules and regulations. So that's there, you know, that it's true. You know, good sadhana is imperative, and Krishna reciprocates with that. But Krishna also reciprocates with surrender to the service. You see? In other words, once you got your sadhana under the belt, if you have that resolve that, okay, now it's service time, you know, and if you have like a commitment that I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it this many days a week, I'm going to do it for this many hours, and you just follow through on that, even your mind might be telling you so many things. I'm tired, I'm this, I'm that, you know. Just do it anyway. Just do it. Just do it. Just probably on one occasion said, chalk out your line of duty and follow it. You see? That means, you know, good weather, bad weather, feeling good, feeling bad, feeling happy, feeling sad, like that. Just do it. And then even your mind could be totally freaking out, screaming, you know. But still, Krishna, it's just material. Krishna will send those people anyway. And, you know, those people who are ripe fruits, and they'll take the books and, you know, engage in devotional service. That's been my experience this last month. I tried to make it a point to basically go out every day, you know. And a lot of the days, I'm, you know, my mind is going, what are you doing? Just, what are you trying to prove? Who are you trying to impress, you know? My mind's coming up with all these different things, you know, and I'm just going, just chill out, mind, you know. Just I'll just, you know, I just go out there, and a lot of times I'm not kind of, you know, all there. And then in the sense, like, it's not like I'm all of a sudden I'm there and I'm okay, here we go, I'm into it, you know. I'm just kind of like, well, am I really going to do this? Am I, you know, do I know what I'm doing? Am I sane, you know, being out here at so many? But I just kind of go through with it, and sure enough, Krishna just makes it happen. You know, the people come, and you know, they're interested, and they engage, the books go out. So that's another thing, that Krishna reciprocates with not only our sadhana, that he definitely does, but also with our service attitude and our service commitment. So that's important, too. So anyway, thank you very much for listening, and I'll stop there. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. If anybody has any further questions that they want to ask about, please come up.